Hello and welcome to the Bosun's Call Woodworking Podcast, Episode 1. I'm your host, James, the Bosun, and today we have for you guest and friend of the show, Justin, a tasty tropical hazy IPA. I'm sorry, it's an imperial IPA with a bear on it. A very cool tool that you would likely use in your shop. And our main topic is going to be choosing and using hand planes if you're getting into either a hybrid shop or getting into hand tools. So without further ado, let's get cracking. Hello, Justin.
Hello, how you doing, James?
Pretty good, pretty good. So let's start off with this. I have in front of me a tantalizing can of Tropical Beer Hug Imperial IPA. It's a 9.9, so be careful, kids. This one's got a punch.
Yes.
Here we go.
One of my favorites, though, for sure.
Oh, yeah. This one's definitely got more of a kick to it. It's a little bit hoppier. I mean, it is an imperial, so there is that. But it's a very clear amber color. Nice head. It's got not a really strong aroma right onto it. Just kind of almost smells like, I don't know, a wheat.
Has a very clear color to it, almost like a lager.
Oh, man, but you talking about the flavor profile, like, it's like, pow, right in the face. Pow, right in the face.
Right away.
It's very hoppy, but not, like, overly hoppy. Mm-hmm.
Like, it hits you in the back taste buds, towards the back of your tongue, but it doesn't last. It doesn't linger in a bad way.
But it's still a nice, like, a complete, like, rounded flavor profile to it. It's definitely a lot sharper and more hops forward. But it's very, very nice. It's not too harsh. It doesn't linger on the palate too long. So I think overall, if you're into the more imperial style side of IPAs, it is nice. It's not like just straight chewing on the hops. So that is very nice, very drinkable. And that is the Goose Island Tropical Beer Hug Imperial IPA. All right. So now we got that cracked open. Let's get on with our cool tool of the day. So I just recently picked one of these up, and it is awesome. I have one. It is the Rockler Silicone Glue Keeper, and it's very nice for projects where you're doing small glue-ups, and you're going back to the glue and back to the glue, but you know, I always end up leaving some out, and it starts developing that skin over it, and you kind of gonna like push that to the side. It's like scraping the mold off the cheese,
right?
and then you're back into it. This I just did a little test. I haven't really used it much yet, but I just put some glue in there. It is like brand new. Like, there's not even a skin on it or anything. The glue
doesn't
is still
get
nice.
Dried out on the edges or
no,
anything.
Not at all. And it's kind of got some cool features. Like, you can flip the lid over, and it's got a little couple spots to hold your brush. You can put it in a position where it's like half on, and then you can just seal it up. And it's pretty cheap. It's only about $10. So
nice.
I believe, and then, you know, there's sales and stuff on it. I got it for a Black Friday deal. So by the time we publish the episode, it'd probably be beyond that. But, you know, they have sales in the future.
Yep.
So that is something I would definitely pick up if you're in a store or if you want to grab it online. I think it's well worth the money to just have a little spot where you can get to glue. Like, if you're doing, like, you know, box finger joints or something like that, and you're doing lots of little glue ups, and you're going back and forth to it, but you don't want it to dry up on you, it's really nice. All right. So, Justin, I showed off some of my stuff to you today.
You did.
What did you think?
I thought it was really cool, right? I haven't had a lot of exposure to the hand planes. I'm completely a beginner when it comes to woodworking. So to get to see the use of the hand plane on a hardwood versus softwood and the results of both, I thought was very cool and fascinating. Loved the smooth finish that it left after just, you know, a few passes with the hand tool. And then the way you can work the edging, do some different things with that same tool on one particular piece of wood it definitely has a lot of purposes, a lot of applications, and just very easy to use and easy to jump right into.
Would you say the cat's out of the bag for hand planes for you?
Absolutely.
I totally almost missed our
our chance to have
radical lingo.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll do that now. So one of my favorite ones is the cat's out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
So
we'll segue into our term for today.
Yeah, and then we'll circle back around to the main topic of hand planes. So I love this one. Okay, because the cat is in reference to the Cat of Nine Tails, which was literally a nine-tailed whip mm-hmm. that was used for discipline on board the ship. If you did something really messed up on board an old tall ship, the bosun was breaking out one of these and making sure that you were brought into line. It would be done publicly because mm-hmm. we believe in corporal punishment then. And there was a bag that hung outside of the bosun's quarters, like for everybody to see, basically. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of there like, hey, you... better not be stealing stuff or messing up or not showing up for your watch or whatever.
Right.
So that bag, like everyone knew it was there. And when the bag was empty, you knew somebody was about to get a whooping.
Yep.
So that's where the term comes. Cat's out of the bag is that it's kind of like, uh-oh, somebody got found out kind of thing. And
yeah.
It's kind of used now for like the stories out in the open. Mm. Like, I guess maybe there was scuttlebutt about, oh, you know, I think somebody's up to something, da-da-da, whatever.
Right.
And once the cat was out of the bag, you know, it was being dealt with. So kind of an interesting term. I like it.
Definitely.
I wonder if it'll change the way you use it, because I'm sure that's one people use all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, cat's out of the bag on this. So, yeah, I took Justin out to the shop and showed him some of the... I have a very, very cheap box store... hand plane. I think it's a number 5. So it's like a scrub plane, essentially. And ran it across a piece of maple and a piece of pine just to kind of see the differences. And then I also have a very nice woodcrafter block plane, which I like a lot, which is a very fancy one. So you kind of get to see the difference between a very inexpensive tool and a more purpose-built, expensive, fancy tool. It's much shinier.
Yes.
And then the cheap one just kind of has like molded plastic grips and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And you can see like there's a lot more pitting and the texture is rougher on the cast iron for the hand plane. But both are nice and sharp. I have to sharpen the hand plane more often if it's a cheaper blade just because the quality of the steel is less. But they do come in handy. And you can see how, like I was explaining to you, sometimes I think it's faster to just break out a hand tool and get a task done quickly, because sometimes power tools require a lot of setup. You know, you gotta clamp it down and get a fence out and draw a line and have guides or have a special bit with the bearing mm-hmm. and set the height for the router, and then you gotta get the power cord out and you gotta get the dust evacuation if you're doing that kind of thing, you know. And it's just. And it's noisy and it's messy, and there's just something really, really nice about hand tools because I can keep listening to my movie or my podcast or whatever I'm doing. I don't have to put on hearing protection.
Yep.
I don't have to do like the curls, you just grab them and chuck them type of thing. So it's a really nice thing to be able to break out that and just like smooth off a piece really quick. Or, you know, like I was showing you the corner chamfers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you can do that with a trim router, fine. But you know, doing it with the block plane is really nice, and it goes really quick. It's silky smooth. I mean, you felt the finish afterwards. It was like
the finish was incredibly smooth. I was blown away by that.
I mean, you wouldn't even bother sanding that.
No, not at all. No need to.
And there's plenty of hand tool users that swear by that and say like there is no need to sand past this point. It's ready for finish. So let's see. We got a couple bullet points here we'll go through. First off is kind of exploring the world of hand planes. And they've kind of gone by the wayside, definitely, with the power tool revolution. Because, you know, it used to be they were the only option.
Right.
If you're trying to straighten a board, it was a smoothing plane or a jointing plane. And that was it. And then now you have... you know, power planers, which is a spinning blade that looks like a hand, kind of like a hand plane kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your big machines, your jointers and your planers, even your lunchbox planers. And then routers do other tasks that planes could do type of thing. But
there was a time where this was the pinnacle. This was the thing to have.
Yep. It was absolutely. And that's a good point because block planes or hand planes that you're going to pick up now were the absolute like pinnacle of their time. The technology had been refined and refined and refined. Because, I mean, there was a time when planes had a wooden sole that you would have to make sure was straight and everything. And then that gave way to them being an iron body or a cast iron body and that kind of thing, which was just found out to be superior. And they kind of kept tweaking with stuff until, you know, and there's all kinds of things you can do with them and accessories and stuff like that. And certainly there are some things that they've added to some of the modern reproductions, but they really haven't changed much. So, yeah, good point. I mean, that's when you get one today, that's the best that technology ever was. So I think a lot of people ask the question, like, is it really faster? And I mean, that's debatable. It depends on the process. But I mean, like for setup on just running a real basic thing, not in all applications, right? Sometimes it's nice to avoid all the setup and the noise and the dust and everything and just knock out something really simple. So it's it's nice to have that handy. Like I use it for a lot of my chamfering. And actually, for my last birthday, I did get a special corner chamfering hand plane. So I do have one specific for the US, but for the longest time, I just used the block plane. And not always perfect, but sometimes you like that kind of rustic look where you can tell it's handmade because that chamfer may be a little different over the length of it on a corner. And you can see like, oh, that's kind of cool. It's definitely handmade. So what was it? I used one recently. I used my cheap box store number 5 as like a sacrificial hand plane. I was once again possessed with the desire to use essentially pallet wood. I hate pallet wood.
What you would refer to as dirty wood.
It's dirty. It's awful. It is so awful. That there's so much out there.
Expand on that, because like I was talking about off mic with you. You look on Pinterest, you see all these pallet projects and whatnot. Build a pallet deck for your above ground pool and this and that. All these applications, right? Pallets typically cheap, readily available. Sometimes you can find a place that is like, yep, if you got a truck and you'll pick it up, you can have them.
Oh,
but
gosh.
Expand on the pitfalls of you kind of get what you pay for, right?
Which is garbage. It's so bad. Like, don't use pallets, please. Like, just don't even burn it.
Yeah.
Just don't go anywhere near it. Okay, so here's the skinny on pallet wood because I was curious about it. Now there are some exceptions. I tried it out. And the only thing I got out of my first pallet project was there was a section of it that was fat wood. and I cut that out and I threw it in my survivalist kit or whatever. So if you don't know what fat wood is, it's when a portion of a pine tree, or sorry, it doesn't actually have to be a pine tree, but an evergreen, a very, very sappy tree, dies off, like a branch dies off, the rest of the tree will pack resin into it. And when you pull it out, it almost looks like amber. Like
okay.
you can shine light in it, the whole thing glows like amber, and it's just packed with resin. And you can scrape some of that off, and it's a great fire starter. That is the only valuable piece of that first pallet that I got that was worth keeping.
Yeah.
And then also the other thing to note is there are a lot of regulations about pallets and what they have to be treated with. We're getting off. This could be a whole episode in itself. Just know a lot of them are at least heat treated to prevent basically importing bugs you don't want here.
Oh, okay.
So they have to be at least cooked. A lot of them are chemically treated. They are stamped with markings that will indicate how they were treated, which are very cryptic. You have to like look at the label and then go try to look up online to see what they actually put into it. But that's why you don't want to use it for anything because, you make a piece of furniture and now you're sitting on something that's been treated with some pretty harsh chemicals. Mm-hmm. Not to mention when you're cutting it, planing it, whatever you're doing, all that dust and stuff, like even if you have the best dust extraction system in the world, you're going to be breathing in some of that. And then a lot of people will chuck that into the scrap bins, the leftovers into the burn pile. Now you're burning chemicals. And so just stay away from pallets. Some of them are just heat treated, but most of it's pretty garbage wood. The reason for it, there's not much salvageable. They're hard to pull apart. a lot of times they'll split. They have nail holes. Some people like the rustic look. I mean, you can do it yourself then. Go drill some holes in your wood before you put it together. And then when it's time to, you know, make the boards nice and flat and smooth, they will absolutely destroy your tools. Okay. I was possessed to once again use some essentially pallet. It wasn't pallet wood. It was a crate that had been assembled around a joiner planer combo tool, that a big beast of a tool. Mm-hmm. So the wood had only ever been used for that purpose. However, the skids that it was on are big, you know, chunks of kind of harder variety pine. And I'm like, yeah, I could make something cool out of that. It's free. You know, so that's the thing. That's the trap, is it's free wood. Mm-hmm. And like lumber is expensive. So you're like, free wood.
Yeah.
Free wood. You're just like, It's free. It's not free.
Favorite price.
Well, yeah, it's free.
Nothing comes without a cost.
It's free if you don't value your time or your tools at all. Because that's the problem, right? So you'll chip all of your blades because there'll be little bits. So like in this stuff, there were little bits of embedded metal because this is where they actually produce the tool. Mm. So it's a machine shop. And so you're like loading it on and dragging it through a machine shop with all these metal shavings and stuff on the ground.
Yeah.
And like there were parts of it that were shiny.
Yeah.
So I'm like, ooh. But I thought, like, okay, well, I'll break out my my cheapo box store plane that I don't care about, and I can resharpen this,
right?
No problem, like pretty easily. Like the steel in the blade's pretty soft, and that's what I did. So I basically ran over it, chipped the hell out of that blade.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
That was my sacrificial blade. Was
right.
This cheap, really cheap, like plastic. And bad cast iron hand plane. And it worked great. And then I was free. You know, I ran my metal detector across it and made sure there was nothing under the surface that I couldn't see. And then ran it through my planer, and it's all great. I'm gonna make a treasure chest out of it.
Nice.
Yarr. It's gonna be great. But yeah, I mean that's one use you can use for it is, you know, if you have a cheap hand plane or something like that, you can use it for roughing out stuff before you take it to a tool that, you know, maybe you don't want to mess up or something like that. And certainly they're a lot more portable than a 1,000-pound jointer planer combo.
Yeah.
So if you're doing any woodworking on the go, hand tools have their place.
So no silky smooth finish on the pallet wood.
No, it still came out silky. Yeah, oh yeah, okay. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Once I got out all the junk, it was just fine. So
okay,
but like there was only like the two skids that were kind of nasty, and the rest of it was fine. You know, and it's like, yeah, it's soft wood, but you know, it's free, and it was all the rest of it except for maybe a couple pieces.
Yeah.
Was, you know, had never been used for anything else because they kind of built a cage around it. So once again, I have fallen into the pitfall of it's free wood.
Right.
You know,
take it and the problems that come with it.
Yeah. So yeah, using pallet wood is no fine. It's fine if you don't value your time, tools, or health. Yeah. Then go for it.
And then even with the silky smooth finish now, regardless of project, you've used a hand plane, you've accomplished that silky smooth finish.
I think that's going to be our title.
Silky smooth finish. At that point, are you ready to apply some kind of varnish? Like you kind of touched on, you don't really feel that there's any sanding necessary. You're at a point where now you can apply a varnish or some kind of finish or stain to it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like a lot of people swear by that for the hand tools and stuff. If you're planing the surface of something, you're done. Like why? If it's that silky smooth, after you run a really, really sharp blade across it, like quit with your head.
Right.
Like,
don't fix it.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And you know, just real quick on the sanding. I mean, sometimes people sand too small on the grit and you actually burnish the wood and press really fine sawdust into the surface, and like by burnishing it, you'll almost like waterproof it against the finish,
okay.
And the finish won't won't be able to penetrate as far in. So it's like, there's definitely a point of diminishing returns where it's like, just stop your, it's good.
Right. This is where
it's not getting any smoother.
Yeah. It doesn't get any better than this.
But yeah, for some things it's like, yeah, you're done. And if it feels good and you're happy with it and there's no like imperfections in the surface, mm-hmm. like time to go finish.
So moving from that finish, segue into specialty planes.
So there are a lot of specialty planes out there. You can get specifically a shooting board plane. So a shooting board is a board with a little spot for you to put a hand plane on its side.
Okay.
And then you can put a board in. There's a little stop for it, and you can run the plane back and forth over the edge, and what it will do is it will smooth out that edge and make it absolutely 90 degrees from the reference edge that's up against the stop block.
Okay.
And that's the, you're like shooting it down the side of the board. And that's,
yeah,
typically you use that for end grain. They make specialty planes that are specifically for that, and even the shooting board itself, you can use that. There's crazy stuff. Like there is a plane that I've seen even in antique stores that has a flexible sole. So you can actually, instead of it being cast iron, it's got the blade in the middle and you can actually bend it down for like, I don't even know what you would make with that. Like a bowl.
Yeah.
<know?
laughs> It's like a very smooth bowl.
I think maybe it's for chairs. I haven't actually found a reason to use one. Like, leave it, comment on it, and below.
If you know, let us know.
Yeah, I've never been possessed to go and get one of them. They're kind of some crazy stuff, I think, towards the end of the era of hand planes. They were, like, coming up with some crazy stuff. And this one, if you throw it across the room, it'll, something, I don't know. And then, like, the other ones you see a lot of time, people have a collection of them in the background or molding planes. So now there's big industrial machines mm-hmm. that make molding. Before that, you would actually have a plane that had a wooden sole that was the shape of the molding. And then the actual iron was cut that way, and you would run that across until you had the molding. And now mostly they just decorate people's wood shops. There's like have big collections of them. I don't see a lot of people use them often.
Right.
It's kind of cool, but a lot of people just go to a store and buy a crown molding or whatever. And they don't bother trying to make it by hand. It'd be kind of cool to do once or twice, but I'm not doing that on the regular.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like crazy planes. If you go to like Veritas or Benchdogs makes planes, you can get old ones, or like Lee Nielsen makes a lot of reproduction planes. So new and old, you can find all that crazy stuff.
Yeah.
They even make a plane just for sharpening your pencil.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's tiny. It's like that.
Tiny little plane. Tiny little thumb and finger plane.
Yeah.
Ah. I'll take an electronic pencil sharpener.
Yeah. I like the old hand crank.
Right.
Looks like a torture device.
Yeah. Mounted to the wall.
Yeah.
Disrupting your entire class so that you can sharpen your pencil.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just get up and in the middle of the lecture. Like, no one understands what we're talking about.
No.
Phones had cords, kids.
Yep. It was a whole different time.
Yeah. Mind blown.
So as a beginner, right, I'm new to this. Walk me through selecting the right hand plane for any specific given task.
So it depends on your use case. Like, I would definitely start with two hand planes. That would be the block plane. I would spend some money on that because I got the cheap box store one, and it was garbage. Just not even hardly usable. The cheap hand planes, so like a number four or a number five, you're like a scrub plane. You're typical like Stanley, what you're used to seeing when you think of a hand plane.
Right.
Like the one you got to use is like a number five.
Okay.
And I'll talk about the numbers later. That's typically what I would start with, because a lot of your like tasks, unless you're really getting into it or you're trying to substitute having to buy a jointer by getting a jointing plane, which is a really freaking long one, then that's what I would start with, the block plane. Because there's a lot of things you can do with that just for like taking off corners really quick or smoothing something out or whatever. So those are, I use that thing all the time. I'm constantly reaching for the black plane, but I would tend to go for something. You don't have to break the bank, but I would go for something a bit nicer.
And then coming back to the silky smooth finish.
There it is.
I just love it, right? Like that was one of my favorite parts of using the hand plane is running my hand over the wood.
Then smelling the curls.
Yeah.
Smell
which
them
I
curls.
Did also, and they smell great,
fresh
right?
Pine curls are
so
amazing.
So natural that, oh, it's incredible, right?
It's nature's potpourri.
Transports you back to nature. You're like, okay, like this comes from the earth.
That pine resin, it smells good.
It does.
It burns good too. You can keep those curls. You can start a fire real quick with those.
Yeah, nice little kindling. So from your expertise, share your insights on achieving those silky smooth finishes on your projects.
Definitely sharpening. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have some know-how in sharpening. Either invest in a tool that's going to just handle all your sharpening needs, or, you know, get some diamond plates or something, or if you're, you know, you like the Japanese stones or something like that. Keeping them sharp and upkeeping them, I wouldn't say the downside. I mean, old tools have to be sharpened. You know, people will argue with me, but like eventually you have to sharpen,
right?
Even your table saw blade, like yep. The carbide needs to be sharpened, right? So keeping up with that and even just going through the process of pulling it apart, taking out your blade and just stropping it to keep it going, because, you know, that really, really thin edge is going to fold over and you just need to straighten it out just like your kitchen knives and just going over your strop or your hone and keeping that edge nice and straightening it out again will improve the life of it. So there's a little bit of upkeep with that. But that's the big thing is just knowing that you got to do a little bit of sharpening on that side. And even with a cheap blade, you're going to be able to achieve, you know, those nice smooth curls and the nice finish and everything. But I think a lot of times where people kind of get frustrated with it is there's a little bit of learning curve with the sharpening if you're new to that. And then, or just trying to force a dull tool across the surface and then being unhappy with the result. Well, it's dull. What do you expect?
Right. And how would they approach sharpening that blade?
So I have a Tormek, so everyone's going to like groan and roll their eyes at that because it's a really fancy tool, but nobody likes sharpening. It's like,
right. Well, we live in a throwaway society, right? Where people are going to be like, oh, now the blade's dull and I need to get these replacement blades or I need to toss this one out, when they could just take a little bit of time, sharpen the blade and proceed with their project.
Oh yeah. No, the stores are going to love you if you just throw your blade away every time it gets dull and blue and go buy another one. Yeah, I'm definitely some things do it, but you have to sharpen everything, so you got to just get used to it. There's a ton of sharpening videos out there, and there's a bunch of different ways to do it. I started with a sharpening guide, which is the little like roller thing, and just diamond stones and some honing fluid or sharpening fluid, and that did it. And just you know, picking your angle and all that kind of stuff, and figuring it out, just spending the time. Definitely, you'll make your life easier if you do it more frequently. Because if you wait until it's really badly dulled or rounded or chipped, and then now you're trying to sharpen all the way down. And then the other thing is just kind of having some know-how about the sharpening and starting with a really rough grit and then progressing to a soft. I think if you start too far into your finer grits, you're going to be frustrated because you're trying to get a chip out or you're trying to get the whole edge, you know, resurfaced, and it's going to go really slow for you. And it's like if you start with something like a grinder wheel or something like that just to get it down and smooth and take out any chips or anything and get the surface all prepped, it's like it's just like sanding. Start with a heavy grit. Work all the way through. Don't skip around. Do it right. You're going to be much happier with the result.
Okay. And is there any particular frequency or just kind of gauge it as it's starting to wear out?
I think as you use them more frequently, you'll kind of feel when it's time to sharpen. Okay. But yeah, I would say, you know, depending on how much you use it, like I'm not using mine a lot right now. But as you use them more, or if you're using them on a larger project, you know, like let's say, you know, you're working on something big and you're using it every day and quite a bit, I would sharpen daily.
Okay.
But if it's just sitting in, you know, waiting for this and that kind of, you know, I want to take this corner off or I want to smooth this out or whatever type of thing, then definitely less frequently. That kind of depends. You'll, for the most part, know when it's time to sharpen it. Pay attention to the curls that you're pulling off, because if you're getting more like dust, that's going to tell you that it's dull.
Okay.
If you're actually getting curls, that's, you know it's sharp. Obviously, if your grain is crazy, if you're doing something that's got like knots or burls or something in it, that grain changing in direction is not going to make nice, you know, curls instead of like straight grain where right. It's like all the way down type of thing.
And it doesn't matter when you're using it as far as with against the grain, the direction of the grain.
Oh, with the grain. You'll know when you're going against the grain. Okay. And sometimes you don't have a choice. Like, you know, if you're doing end grain or something like that, or if you have something where the grain direction changes mid-board, you know, you can attack that in different ways. And then there's some planes that have a lower angle. Mm-hmm. And, man, that is a whole rabbit's hole in and of itself. Is what angle do I want to choose type of thing. Like there's low angle smoothing planes, which are nice for like really problematic kind of woods that really like to fight you and like do a lot of tear out and stuff. But, you know, there's all these different analogies. You can think about it like if you're holding a whole fistful of toothpicks and then like slant them at a 45. Mm-hmm. And then imagine trying to cut across those. If you're going kind of in the direction that they're pointing, you know, you're going to shave off the top few and that'll be okay because you're kind of going in their direction. If you go against it, they're going to fray up and try to fight you and right. They're going to rip and tear and like some of them will break and the whole half of the toothpick will come out. And that's kind of a good analogy. It's like petting a cat the wrong way.
Okay.
Not gonna go well for you. So yeah, and I think that's one of the cool things about using the hand tools is you kind of get a better sense for that. Because even if you're say running through something like a planer, like a power tool, if you're going against the grain, it's gonna rip and tear out. You know, even though it's doing all the work, you ran it through the wrong way, and it's gonna let you know.
Yeah.
So having kind of that tactile, you know, experience with the grain direction, I think gives you a greater appreciation for it because it's more hands-on.
Awesome. And then what are you doing with the curls? Like, do those have any practical use or is that just stuff to discard? You kind of touched on like
I don't really use them for anything. Yeah. Well, yeah, you can if you want to. Yeah. They smell nice and everything. No, I don't really use them for anything. I've heard of people using them as like packing. Like if you're doing like, you're making like a box and you're putting like a bottle of wine or something in it, you can grab the nice ones and put them in there as like packing material. Okay. That would be kind of
nice
cool.
Aesthetic packing. Yeah. Versus.
No, there's not really any other purpose for those. Okay. But it just depends.
Now, when we were in the shop, you talked a little bit about the scraper cards to kind of compare, contrast our hand planes that we've discussed and where the scraper card comes into play.
Mm-hmm. Scraper cards are great. They are not a hand plane, but they kind of go in hand in hand with them. A scraper card is what it sounds like. It's a metal card and you burnish the edge of it with a hardened steel rod after, you know, kind of squaring it off with a file. And then basically what you're doing is you're rolling the edge over, you're giving it a little burr. And then what you do is you take the card and at an angle, scrape it across the wood. And that it was the predecessor to sandpaper because there was a time when sandpaper didn't exist.
Right.
And it also gives you a silky smooth finish. Nice. And it's very nice. And it's very handy and it's easy to break one out and like pull something off. I use it a lot for like removing something. So the biggest one is if I get like a new handle for something like an axe, I don't like the real heavy varnish, shellac, whatever that's on it. It's more like a varnish, I guess, like a polyurethane. So I will scrape that off.
Oh, okay.
And I'll get some like boiled linseed oil and I'll use that instead on the bare wood. Cause if it's a good handle, it's ash, and ash, ash looks great with some linseed oil or something like that on it. That's one thing you can do, but really if you're trying to, get that silky smooth finish with your hand planes, there's a couple of things you can do. Keep your blade sharp. Your angle of attack. So let's say you're shooting down the edge of a board with your plane. If you kind of just angle the plane at, say, you know, like 30 degrees off kind of thing. So you're coming across kind of, it's, you're drifting for the, for all the kids listening, you're drifting across it with a hand plane, right? At an angle. I mean, what it is now that blade is at an angle. So it's going across. So it's kind of slicing instead of having to plow through the wood fibers. You know, obviously grain direction matters. That's kind of the technique of it. If you want to get really crazy into it and actually get into jointing, you can also get or make for yourself something called winding sticks.
How would you make those?
So winding sticks are really, really simple. All they have to be is the same length and square. Typically, they're you could do them like a couple feet long max, I would say. And then you can kind of decorate the ends. Usually you have the ends. And what it is if you're trying to get a board straight, you'll take, and you make them in pairs. So you'll put one winding stick on one end of the board, one on the other end of the board. And if you look down it, if they're like not level with each other, even in the slightest degree, what it is it's exaggerating as they sit on that board. Like, let's say the board twists to the right. You're going to see that far winding stick, the right side of it, sticking up. Almost like a tightrope walker with you know, the long stick that they hold for balance. You're going to see one of them is like out of whack. And you're like, okay, at that end of the board, the right side is too high. And then you can adjust the blade because there's that little tilt adjust on the blade. So when you're going down it, you can knock off that corner and then go check it again.
Okay.
So that's if you're really going to do a deep dive. Like, I don't even have winding sticks right now because I have a planer joiner. And then what's the other thing that can help you? Lubrication. Everyone's favorite topic.
How does that come into play with this?
So
obviously the planer's not self-lubricated.
Well, it does have oil or something, I think. But no, for anything really, cast iron, and that includes the sole of a plane. Paste wax is all I use.
Okay.
And I would just rub like a little squiggly line over the sole of it. And I use it on my, I use it on everything cast iron. I use it on my bandsaw. I use it on my table saw. I use it on my joiner planer. And it just helps the wood glide across it easier. So you're not like pushing so hard. Cause that definitely can also be a safety issue if you're really pushing it through.
Right.
And it just, it makes it glide really nice and easy. So you're not getting so much friction. The only friction you're getting is from the blade actually cutting. Couple extra things you can do to improve the cut with your planer, or sorry, your hand plane, is you can close up the mouth. Now, cheaper planes, the mouth is the actual opening where the blade comes out.
Right.
On cheaper planes, you're not going to have an adjustable mouth. But actually, the part of the sole, the bottom, the sole of the plane, is going to move back and forth, and it's going to either make that mouth narrower or wider. If it's wider, it kind of gives more room for it to kick up more chips and stuff. If it's narrower, you're going to get smoother. It's kind of forcing the curl and everything to do what you want it to do versus what it wants to do. There's another thing called the chip breaker, and that's the other thing that kind of looks like a blade but isn't a blade, that's attached to the blade on top.
Okay.
And what it is when that blade is cutting, the chip breaker is basically separating the curl away from the blade to kind of clear it. And a lot of times people will put that too far back from the actual cutting edge of the blade, and that'll give you some issues, or stuff is getting in between.
So it gets jammed up.
Yeah, so it gets jammed up. So you can check that regularly if you're having issues with the mouth getting clogged up with chips. You shouldn't be getting chips. You should be getting curls. But sometimes, you know, you're working with something crazy. So move that forward. And then the curls will kind of tell you how you're doing. You know, it'll tell you if you're against the grain. It'll tell you if you're biting off too much or not enough. You know, if your blade's sharp. You know, if everything is right and it's in alignment, you should be getting those nice, long, continuous curls that are kind of cool to play with.
Right.
And then if you are getting some areas where you, like, the maybe the grain direction changes, like, you're, you know, like a quarter away through the board, there's a knot, and the grain goes from you going with it to you going against it for a second, you can go after that with the scraper card, because the scraper card is great for dealing with finicky grain.
Oh, okay.
If you want to, yes, smooth that out instead of risking going over it with the plane, even if you're doing it at, you know, kind of an angle and it still is fighting you, maybe just not, and then take the scraper card to it, and then it'll behave a little bit more.
Just gonna let you fine tune it a little bit more with the scraper card.
Yep, absolutely.
Excellent. All right. I look forward to some projects where I can get my,
it's
my hand
cool.
plane going. It is. It created like a cool texture, cool effect with the wood. I like it. It's easy to use. I look forward to using hand planes and projects on the future.
And you can fill gift bags up for this Christmas with wine and silky smooth curls.
Yep.
All right. That's all we have for you today. If you want to find out more about us, you can reach us at bosunscall.com, where we have links to our podcast, our video series on YouTube that we're getting started. You can also find us on social media at Instagram and on Facebook if you want to check out some photos of maybe some of the things that we have on the bench right now. Other than that, please leave comments or suggestions, or if you have a question, you can go online and drop that in the contact us section of the website. If you have something that you'd like to hear us talk about on the show, please drop it there, and we will do that later. Happy woodworking. See you later. Bye.